Commissioner Chi.
Present.
Commissioner Cole. Commissioner Insani is excused. Commissioner Fuentes is excused. Commissioner Gaimi. Commissioner Hale.
Here.
Commissioner Kong.
Present.
Commissioner Maldonado is excused. Commissioner McCarthy.
Here.
Commissioner Moloditskaya is excused. Commissioner Moses.
I actually saw him coming, and he's coming.
So he'll be along shortly. Okay. Commissioner Ng is excused. Commissioner Paz.
Present.
Commissioner Tom.
Here.
And the commission needs one more commissioner for a quorum.
Okay, with that, obviously, as we go forward, if we don't get that quorum between now and through the meeting, we will not be able to take votes on action items. But let's proceed forward. At this point, we'd like to open up public comment. Members of the public may address the Commission on items not appearing on the agenda for a period of time of not to exceed 3 minutes. Speakers shall address their remarks to the Commission as a whole and not individual commissioners or department personnel. At that, I'd like to open up public comment. Is there somebody here for public comment who would like to make some public? Please step forward, introduce your name, and you have 3 minutes, sir. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Dr. Pan, commissioners. Thank you for allowing me to speak here. My name is Peter Mancina, and I'm an anthropology graduate student from Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee. Oh. And I now live here in San Francisco doing my dissertation work on what is a sanctuary city from an anthropological perspective, which means basically I look at what's the day in the life of city employees who work with immigrants, some of whom are undocumented, some of whom are documented. What is it like to be a commission like your commission, working in this at the city level on sanctuary city issues, issues related to immigrants? I would like to work with city employees as well in what are called the Tier 1 departments, the departments that work primarily with the public, frontline employees that work with immigrants on a day-to-day basis, and also with undocumented immigrants in the city. I currently work with undocumented people from Chiapas, Mexico, as they wait for day labor on the streets in the Mission District. I've been to Chiapas. I've met a lot of their families in the countryside where they come from. I've studied why they come here from Mexico and what their life is like here. So I'm looking really at the relationship between this immigrant community, other immigrant communities I'm very interested in too, in as well, but for the sake of this research topic, I'm looking at the experience of Latino immigrants in the Mission District and with a focus particularly on these guys from Chiapas. I've done historical work as well on how San Francisco became a sanctuary city, looking at the sanctuary movement in the 80s, the early 80s, how they worked with city government, the Board of Supervisors, the Human Rights Commission, to get the resolution passed in 1985, and also to get it beefed up to an ordinance in 1989, and then as well what the Human Rights Commission did to get the sanctuary ordinance actually enacted in the city departments like the police department, the fire department, Department of Social Services, which is now Human Services Agency. And so I've done that historical work, and now I'm also looking at what it's like to be a sanctuary city today from a governmental perspective as well as from an immigrant perspective. I've been interviewing city officials here. Some of your commissioners I've interviewed in the past, and Director Pan I've also interviewed. I'm very eager to interview anyone else who's interested in talking to me about immigrant issues, what it's like to govern a city that has a large undocumented immigrant population, what it's like to be a person who works on sanctuary city policy as well. Thank you very much.
Traditionally, we're not supposed to ask questions in public comment, but I think this is a fascinating subject for us, so I will open it up if any commissioners have any.
But how would you be contacted? How would you be contacted?
I can hand out I have a business card here. If anyone would like it, I can hand it out. I can be here, or I could leave it here for you all if you would like to take it.
Okay. Commissioners, the Office of Civic Engagement and Immigrant Affairs, we're glad to forward any requests directly to you. We ask that you totally support Peter and his efforts. I think there's a lot of research and work that he's doing that is definitely in alignment with your work. And on down the line, we may be looking at other areas that we can collaborate on.
Okay.
My question is, what are you looking for towards the end?
Towards the end, the idea behind my dissertation would be to basically show what it's like to be a sanctuary city, so that the rest of the country could look at this model. It could adopt certain things that work for a city, if they're considering sanctuary policies, or if they're a city that's considering anti-sanctuary policies. If they want to look at this case study, see what it might be like to actually, you know, not just talk about being a city of refuge, but what it's actually like to be a city of refuge. What are the challenges that that brings? What are these advantages or the opportunities that it provides governments when working with immigrant communities? So it's really to sort of engage in some way in immigrant or immigration reform debate at the national level, and also to provide some sort of documentation for local for people here in the government who want a holistic view of what a sanctuary city is like, and also for nonprofits that want a history of, you know, all of the movements that have worked with the government in a collaborative manner, so they can know the history of that collaboration, and also so they can think, have some sort of an analysis of what's going on today. So it's hopefully useful for government people, for nonprofits, and for people outside of San Francisco.
And how responsive are the people you're talking to?
The immigrant community?
Yeah, the immigrant community.
They're very responsive, actually, because I know their families. I'm learning one of their languages, Celtal Maya. It's a Mayan language from Chiapas, Mexico. So they understand that I'm a person who actually cares about them, who wants to know about them, that wants to know their real situation. It's taking a lot of effort to know their situation, and I'm trying to build trust with them so that they know that I'm here not as somebody who's trying to police them, but somebody who really wants to know what their needs are, what their concerns are, what their fears are, so as to work with also government people to help address those needs and those fears in some way to alleviate them.
I had a couple follow-up questions, if I may.
Sure, go ahead there, Commissioner.
Just, again, trying to better understand the purpose of the research.
Sure.
And you initially mentioned that you wanted to provide an anthropological kind of lens around
mm-hmm.
the issue.
That's
but
right.
What you sort of just described is more of a policy lens. So
sure.
That just kind of raises some
sure.
further questions about,
sure.
you know, policy can be used both positively, it can also be used,
yeah.
especially in the immigrant community,
yeah.
in a negative way. So I'm just a little bit concerned.
Mm-hmm.
What lens is going to really are you looking for? If it's
mm-hmm.
anthropological, which is more really understanding,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of root issues of why people come here, especially from the Maya
mm-hmm.
community and
mm-hmm.
the immigrant community.
Mm-hmm.
But you're also trying to understand the sanctuary policy issue, which
mm-hmm.
is a mm-hmm. Which lens is really the main focus of your research?
I'm looking at the relationship. Really, I'm looking at the human side, the relationship between government people and undocumented people. So, and immigrants in general, but undocumented people in specific, because I think that's very unique, a city that cares about undocumented immigrant people. So from an anthropological perspective, I'm looking at a governmental culture on one side, a culture of tolerance, and looking at how policy gets enacted. So not just looking at it from a policy perspective, a legal perspective, but seeing how actually policy gets implemented. So is this policy actually working on the ground? And to have an anthropological perspective, I want to understand sort of the psychological elements that go into both city employees that are trying to understand what a sanctuary city policy is and how it translates into their day-to-day work, as well as how immigrants experience accessing services in a sanctuary city. So the policy perspective sort of gives me a structural framework to approach a relationship between people, a relationship that happens between immigrants and these service providers.
Okay.
Thank Commissioners, you. Just as way of background, so Peter will be publishing his findings in his doctoral dissertation, and then that'll be published in a book
mm-hmm.
eventually. And I believe you told mm-hmm. us that he's not identifying any of the interviewees by
right.
name.
Right.
I think he's looking at the whole picture and
mm-hmm.
trying to make some sense of it.
Yeah.
That's right.
So we would encourage you to participate, and the office
mm-hmm.
will be glad to forward all requests directly
mm-hmm.
to commissioners. There are a few
Thank
commissioners
you.
That you would definitely want to
mm-hmm.
talk to.
Thank you very much. Yes, I will be keeping all names anonymous of all people that are not public officials. So all public officials, I will first ask them
sure.
ahead of time if I can use their names. And then all people I meet on the street, I will keep their names anonymous.
Commissioner Hill?
Just one more question. is this an issue for Nashville, Tennessee?
Yes. I mean, I haven't followed so closely immigration city-level immigration policy in Nashville, Tennessee. But yes, absolutely, because there's an undocumented population there, and there's from all over the place, from Latin America, also from Africa. There's a large Ethiopian population there too. But I think this relates to any city that wants to seriously engage undocumented to have a relationship with undocumented people. How policy actually translates into the way that the city, the frontline employees, actually interact with undocumented people.
Yeah. Do we have another question? No. Thank you, Peter, for coming out to talk. I just have a quick comment, and it's more of a statement than more anything else. To me, the sanctuary city, when left alone, kind of operates pretty good once the government within are all on the same page, as it were. It seems to lose its... it seems to get thrown into turmoil when enforcement so that's something I think that really is probably going to be the tipping for a lot of the sanctuary city. And I would imagine that most of the issues that you're coming up against, the fear factor would be the enforcement aspect of it, you know, which has kind of probably raised its ugly head since 9/11. But before that, I would imagine, and based on what I remember, that the sanctuary city was quite good. It worked once you had the local government aboard. So I think it'd be interesting to see how that comes back and how, like you were saying, the early 80s versus, let's say, now the late 2000s, you know, see what the difference was, you know.
Right.
You know, I think. But great work. Thank you for doing it here in the city. We're very proud of our sanctuary city. So anything you can publish. We did do a report there last year. Director Pond, the report that we did last year that we brought the Sacramento on Immigrant Day and all that. Does he have a copy of that?
Are you referring to the Comprehensive Immigration Reform?
Yeah.
Report?
Yeah.
No, but we're going to be providing him.
Yeah.
That was a 2009
report. 2009 report that we did. We're kind of proud of that report. There's a lot of stuff in there, I think, that kind of relates to the sanctuary city, and it kind of gives an understanding of where we come from. And when we went to Sacramento that day, it was quite interesting to meet. I know Commissioner Felix Fuentes went here. Well, there was a few commissioners up there. We were up there. And it was interesting to, because we went into the, let's say, the anti-immigrant, so-called anti-immigrant legislators, and we found them the most receptive.
Wow.
And we found, my personal feeling was that tell us something that we need, that we can explain to our community why Sanctuary City works or why we should have it. And I think it was just an educational point of view that would go a long way with these lot of immigration issues. So I think what you're doing is something that kind of reinforces that. I'm not saying you're going to come out with that this is the best thing that ever happened, but from that point of view, that's what I think it's just education is what we need when it comes to it. Okay.
I would love to contribute something to that discussion as well. And I look at Sanctuary City not just as a sanctuary ordinance, but looking at really and not just having service providers, city service providers, not discuss immigration details with immigration authorities, but also looking at how does a city make itself available in many ways. So this includes language access, the municipal ID program, many different programs the city has that makes us a sanctuary city beyond the sanctuary city ordinance.
Okay. Thank you, and good luck with everything, Peter. And if there's anything we can do, we're here. Letters you need for anything to open up doors to police departments, anything you need, please come to us and we will write them for you.
Great, thank you so much. I appreciate that greatly.
I'm presuming we will. I'm just We'd have to vote on everything. I'm just talking out loud. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for coming here and sharing that with us, Peter. Okay, thank you. So is there any more public comment? Seeing none, if I may, Madam Clerk, I'd like to acknowledge Commissioner Call is here and Commissioner Moses. So we have quorum, is that correct? Okay, so we will be able to vote on everything. So next one is an action item, approval of previous minutes. Approval of the January 10th, 2012 Commission meeting. Is there any friendly amendments?
I move they be approved as distributed.
Second.
We have a second on that. Is there any objection? See none. I will call the question then. A move to approve the minutes. See no objections? Okay. So moved.
No, I moved it.
Okay. Next item. is item four, which is an information item. An appointment of Commissioner Call to the Executive Committee. So we had our little executive meeting there the last day. I'll just give the quick introduction and hand it off to Commissioner Pond if she needs to weigh in, or Director Pond. We came to the conclusion that once again we're kind of between schedules and everything to make a full executive committee. We needed what's the term, Vera? We need
quorum.
Quorum. But we needed one more commissioner. At large. Yeah, an at-large commissioner. And Commissioner Call had no objections, but she was recommended. And if she has no objection, we'd like to appoint her as the at-large for the executive committee. Is there any objections on that? Okay, so the motion's on the floor. Do we have to vote on this?
Commissioner and Chair, you do not need to vote on this.
Okay.
Appointment of committee members is at the discretion of the chair.
Okay, finally something I can do without without the family weighing in. Okay, all right, so with that, I am fine with that. If there's no more discussion on that, welcome, Commissioner Call. Yeah, okay. Okay, on to item five, which is an action item, discussion and approval of a letter to University of California at San Francisco regarding provisioning of an emergency medical service regardless of an immigrant status. This is an interesting thing that was brought up at the executive committee, which we have a letter that we want to share with everybody that we'd like to vote on. However, that said, and I'm sure Commissioner Call brings us up to speed, I did hear in the news that things were resolved, and I did call Director Pond on this, and we both agreed to keep this on the calendar as a discussion item, because I think it's case in point of the type of community outreach we should be doing. So if I may, Commissioner, you want to take it from there? Thank you.
So thank you, Commissioner McCarthy. The issue that we're talking about and we're addressing and trying to address on the record with a letter is a case that came to public light just about a week ago when kidney transplant patient at UCSF reported that he had been denied a kidney transplant based on his immigration status as an undocumented person. And within a week, over 130,000 people signed an online petition around the country on behalf of this man who had insurance, had been working working in the United States until he was subject to a no-match letter and lost his job along with 200 workers at Pacific Steel in Berkeley this summer. He lost his insurance. He was then told that he would not have access. He says he was then told he would not have access to kidney transplant services at UC San Francisco because he could not provide proof that he would have access to ongoing follow-up, the rigorous post-transplant care that was necessary. This raised a lot of questions for us and for a lot of people about the meaning of transplant, of the meaning of sanctuary in San Francisco with our affiliated public institutions, and a lot of concern about what that kind of publicity around an issue like that would do for immigrant San Franciscan sense of belonging, entitlement, and right to equal health care services without discrimination based on immigration status. Fortunately, the public outcry, including probably a question inquiry questions like our own, led to a clarification by UCSF and the release of a joint statement late Friday afternoon by Mr. Navarro, the patient, and UC San Francisco Kidney Transplant Services that they do not discriminate on the basis of immigration status, that they would be working very carefully with Mr. Navarro and third-party private or nonprofit service agencies to try to get him access to the insurance and financial support he would need to remain on the kidney transplant list based on access to follow-up care. So that's the story. The arc of the story has already changed since we started discussing this last week in a good way. However, the letter was amended. Thank you very much for the very efficient, quick amendment of the letter to University of California officials. Now praising them for clarification of their policy and alerting them to our continued attention to this issue, an issue of equal access to public health services, including tertiary care and high levels of care, like high-level services like transplants. So I'm really pleased with the revised version of the letter, because I think that at this the statement from UCSF did not in any way guarantee Mr. Navarro's access to this transplant, or that other undocumented people would always receive access to transplant. It just was a statement of non-discrimination. So our continued attention to this and support of their good intentions so far is, I think, positive.
Good. So we're gonna send this letter, though it's been changed, I think.
Well, assuming that the commissioners haven't had a chance to review it. It's
I think it's, you know, it reads very well. So thanks to the director. She responded really rapidly on this and kind of took the initiative. Known us that we'd like to still let our opinion be known, and I think this does that.
Yeah.
And I think what's important to point out, that, you know, this ain't a done deal, as Commissioner Call pointed out, and, you know, just to keep on the record and let them know that we have this on our radar and that we'll check in and weigh on it later on, I think is a good policy.
Yeah. So,
and I think the ultimate thing which we talked about, and I don't want to hash out the executive committee meeting, is, but this is the type of thing that's directly result from this no match letters, you know. That a lot of companies are contending with on a daily basis, and it's been devastating to particular industries such as the service industries and stuff and things like that. And I believe we'll probably have more of these type of cases where this no match kind of plays out here, and this is just case one of where is a man who would not be in front of us with this issue if the no match letters had gone out, because he was a recipient of that and was released based on that. Because of his legal status. So this is the kind of stuff that we need to keep the different people out there understanding that we're watching this, and it's just another case of bad government here with this no match.
Well, I think we approve sending the letter.
Okay.
I really appreciate the proactive work of this committee. I think this is really important. And I think one of the main issues here is that we remind our affiliated public institutions, or were they public or community institutions, of the spirit of our sanctuary policy. Because I think that was the issue that I think the original letter was going to point out, that needed to be honored in terms of really protecting the rights and human dignity of our immigrant brothers and sisters. So I really appreciate that stance was taken right away as addressing that issue. And again, it's something we need to be watchful of in the future.
Yeah, I want to recognize Director Pond for very quickly writing a very effective letter and then equally quickly revising it.
Even faster, so.
Very fluent. Yeah. So with that, I'd like somebody to make a motion to approve and send this letter out. Commissioner Call, can you make a motion?
I'd like to move that.
Okay, so there's a motion. Can I have a second on that?
I'll second.
Is there any objections? See none. So moved. Okay. All right, thank you again for that.
I'm sorry, I'll follow up on this on my own too, but just the couple of questions that I had regarding what's going on is, just in case you have a better, wasn't he already on the top of the list?
Yeah.
So what is he, now just waiting for approval of insurance? Is that what
No, he, the patient was at the top of the list. He had met with UC officials. He had a donor, organ donor who was a match, who was his wife. And he was fully insured by private insurance. So the only issue was UCSF reversed his policy and found out during the meeting that he did not have documentation for being here in the United States. And based on that, they came to the conclusion they would not be able to provide for his aftercare sufficiently. So it's interesting. It's the power of immediate response. I think the commission said at their retreat in January that they wanted to be able to respond more quickly and weigh in. And I think it's thanks to Commissioner Cole, who was really monitoring the issue and brought it to the executive committee's immediate attention so that we could quickly weigh in on it.
But right now, what are they waiting for? Because as it reads to me, it's stating that he is on the list, not he's getting the transplant.
But he wasn't.
Huh?
He was taken off the list.
Exactly. So my question is, why isn't he just, instead of being on the list, getting the transplant?
They're moving towards that.
Okay.
Yeah, they're now
negotiating. I think it's an issue of demonstrating that he has the financial means to provide for the care.
Okay, that's my question.
And so now it's a question of insurance.
Okay.
And access. And this points to broader issues of cuts in Medicare and public health care insurance access for the poor in general.
Okay. So that's,
Because the transplant itself is covered by emergency Medi-Cal.
Yeah.
But the follow-up care is not.
Care.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there was such a huge public outcry that UCSF then reversed its original decision. So that's what, this is a different kind of case where I'm hoping that going for it, they have a new policy that takes that into consideration. So.
Fantastic.
Good work, Commission.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioners. And just as a matter of protocol, before we vote on things, if you have more questions, please stop me and ask those questions before we take a vote on things. So all discussion is discussed before. Okay. All right. If I'm moving too fast, just tell me and just stop me. Okay. All right. But I do ask if there's any more discussion before we take a vote on anything, and that's your cue if you have any more questions. Okay. Item six, discussion on the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeal recent ruling to halt deportation proceedings in 5 immigrant cases and Immigrants and Customs Enforcement, ICE, guidelines for the immigrant enforcement and deportation proceedings. Commissioners, which commissioners would like to discuss on that?
Well,
Commissioner Hill?
Commissioner,
I know you were going to walk between the two of you on that.
Yeah, I got the article.
Okay, so Commissioner Hill, the floor is yours.
Commissioner Guyman got it from on the internet, too, so she has from an FinLaw's Legal Technology Center, and the Chronicle on the 7th of February reported that there were 5 deportation cases that they're holding. The 9th Circuit agreed to hold up these cases and not act on them. They were people who were undocumented, but had immigration lawyers had said that they should be deported, and they appealed to the 9th Circuit Court of Appeal, and they said this is not consistent with the policy that was put forward by the Obama administration, that you only focus on on people with criminal records, and when it is disruptive to children and provides hardship for the family, they should not be deported if there is no criminal. And these families have no criminal effect on them and in their case. And so they are being, the court is refusing to act on whether they should be deported or not because it doesn't seem consistent with the policy. So one of the judges, Judge Diarmuid O'Scanlan, disagreed with the other two, but it didn't matter. They are still waiting. They're holding it up and waiting for some further clarification from the Obama administration and John Morton, the Director of Immigration and Customs.
Is there discussion?
I actually would like to say that this policy is actually very big because it expands past this. It's saying that previously it used to be that if you came to the United States illegally, that your family couldn't petition to bring you here. So you'd and then if you were found to be here, there's a ban where you'd be banned for 3 to 10 years. From ever coming into the United States if you came illegally. So what this does is, if your family petitions for you, you don't have to leave the country until USCIS makes a decision. You can stay here and not be afraid of being detained. So what happens a lot of times is families would be too scared to file for a relative petition. At this point right now, they feel more confident in filing if they're the spouse or the child. And even if they are detained, if they don't have any criminal records, as Commissioner Hale was saying, the court is halting any decision to deport them. So it's actually fantastic for, parents who've been living here for 20 years and they, you know, somehow, some way get detained for really simple infractions. I think we had someone here not too long ago who was detained after being here for 20 years, and he spoke of how he, you know, never got his citizenship for whatever reason, mm-hmm. and now he had to go through an ordeal.
Mm-hmm. Because he had some infraction and some
silly misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. So this is actually very good.
Yes, this is the first time the court has stood up and supported the Obama administration's comments that he didn't want people deported unless he was not doing all these searches just to find anybody who was undocumented. I can't lean over that far. That he was only looking for people with criminal records. And so they are trying to get clarification as to how far they can carry that. And one of the families has been here 20 years, and evidently some of them do have children born in this country.
Yeah.
And if you're going to deport parents, you're going to disrupt families and cause more problems. So I don't know how we can encourage it to go further. You can't write to the Ninth Circuit Court, but I don't know, if there's other action we could take in support of this position?
Well, Commissioners, it's open. Any ideas? What you want to do is to show kind of a support is what we're saying here on the record.
I mean, people were so concerned about the raids that we had, and I don't think we've been having as many of them, though. I just haven't heard about it.
Yeah.
But
I mean, the only thing we could do is if we wanted to do a resolution, kind of. No, these resolutions, a one-page resolution, somebody would have to volunteer to do it. But if somebody would do that, we could do a resolution and send it on.
That we support.
Director Pond?
Commissioners, just a couple of reminders on timing, because timing is everything. So they have until March 19th, I believe. The administration has until March 19th to respond with clarity on what the policy is. Your next meeting would hit, I think, just prior to the 19th in March, so you would have to have the resolution drafted and cleaned up in order to vote on it at the next commission meeting, and then have staff forward that on your behalf in time to weigh in on the issue. And I, you know, you can make a general statement, but I think you would have to do a little research first on what that statement would be.
Okay. Is there any volunteers who would do that? Would that be of legally minded? Looking at nobody in particular, Commissioner? I would like a simple resolution, something that's generic in its format that kind of just supports the position that it's been taken. Would that be
keeping,
right?
Well, yes, we have supported keeping families
together and not just
raiding people and getting rid of part of a family or getting rid of the whole family if there are no other circumstances. Apparently these five have no other circumstances according to the Ninth Circuit.
Yeah.
So obviously, is there any more discussion on this? See, no more discussion. We can't vote on this tonight, but if we could have that for the next executive committee meeting, which is, Sydney?
Next Wednesday. February 22nd.
February 22nd. Next executive.
Didn't we just have one?
I know, but we were behind.
That one was late.
That was late.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Commissioner, if you want to draft just the main points, we'll be glad to put it formatted for you and everything and add all the formal things to it.
Okay.
Thank you, Director. I didn't want to suggest that, you know, unless you offered it up.
Oh, so next Wednesday is two Wednesdays. The 22nd is in two Wednesdays, right?
No.
The 15th and then the 22nd,
next
right?
Wednesday is 22nd.
No, this week is the 15th. The 22nd.
I'm looking at my calendar.
It's 9 days from today, so.
Okay, yes. Yeah. 9 days from today. It's fine. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Is there any more discussion on this item? See none. Okay, this item is closed. The next one is item 7, which is a review of the Commission 2012 and 14 Strategy Plan Director.
Okay, Commissioners, I'm passing down to you your strategic plan and then also an updated version of committee assignments and committee chair guidelines for your, and we'll just go over, there's just really one section of that that we'd like you to take a look at. This is a follow-up from your January strategic planning session. So we've prepared a list of suggested activities that dovetail and are in sync with your stated priorities, goals, and objectives. And I think what we're trying to drive towards, but we ran out of time at the strategic planning session, was to drill down to, you know, a set of specific activities that the commission is going to engage in for the next calendar year. So if you turn to just page 2 of the strategic plan, where it says propose key events for calendar year 2012, this is the staff's recommendation based on your planning session and your feedback, and we propose up to this many activities, which we feel are realistic for the commission and its committees to implement. And in the past, the staff has implemented all of the commission's activities on your behalf. We'll be glad to support you, but I think with the directive from your planning session is that commissioners are going to start driving this. So we recommend 2 neighborhood meetings, one in District 3 and one in District 6. Some key learnings from the last neighborhood meeting that we really need to focus it on a specific topic that is relevant to the population in that community. D3, which would be the Chinatown, Knob Hill, Russian Hill area, and then D6, which is Soma, South of Market, you know, Tenderloin. A lot of those issues may be around the changing demographics, language access. You have a lot of non-English speaking or limited English speaking residents in those areas. And we would ask that you, when the programs committee decides on the dates, that you also target in on a specific topic. You don't have to decide that today. And then the second activity we recommend is for you to issue one major report on either one of the above proceedings or on another topic, such as immigration, language bias, cultural, linguistic barriers, et cetera. Again, your program committee can pick the topic of the paper, but be like a research document. And you have a lot of talented individuals on the commission, one in particular who is a published author of many writings, and I'm sure that that will be a good piece of writing for the commission. And then we suggest one major hearing. You could do something like either a hearing on language access or have SF Island do a report out on the immigrant integration findings, because they will be doing needs assessment and having a series of dialogues. So you could actually convene a hearing and then have them provide testimony that goes on the public record. And then we suggest one joint event for visibility. So this could be a citizenship event. Our office would help organize it, and then you would be one of the sponsors, one of the core sponsors of the event. And finally, a second annual consulate mixer, driving off of the successful one you had last December. So those are just the staff recommendations for specific activities. We're hoping that the commission at the retreat would kind of zero in on which core activities it wanted to implement this year. So these are our suggestions. And then the second document is just an update on the working committees of the commission. And you'll notice that there are currently 4 committees of record, the executive committee, the Programs and Access Committee, which will be renamed as just Programs Committee, and then the Outreach Committee, and the Immigration Reform Committee, which we propose to be renamed as Policy and Legislation Committee. The reason we say proposed is we'll have to draft new bylaws for you reflecting these changes. And on the back of that sheet is a list of the working committees based on how commissioners stated their interests. There is one issue, I think, that is ongoing, and that is finding a quorum for your committee meetings. The Outreach Committee has almost more than half of the commission on it, and very seldom does it have a quorum. So our suggestion is that the chair appoint three or four regular committee members, and then when there is an event, we can add on as a subcommittee other commissioners to help plan and execute the event.
In the meantime, we can still carry on with the same policy that we had, that the executive committee can be representative of all those other three committees. Because, you know, traditionally the way it's been working pretty good is that, you know, if you're on those committees and you want to itemize something, we just put on the executive committee, have one meeting, and we'll do it all there. So if there's no objection to that, we'll keep on going with that formula. Okay? Is there any more discussion?
I wanted some clarification. If, for instance, on the Outreach Committee, if we didn't have a quorum, could we not agree on something that would become our policy?
If the question, if I understand the commissioner, is that, like at the Executive Committee, let's say if you're on the Outreach Committee and you have do you want to discuss something on there, we can do it at the Executive Committee without an actual full Outreach Committee, correct?
Yeah. Commissioners, yeah. If you have a committee meeting, you must have a quorum for your decision to get forwarded.
Yeah.
So what the chair is suggesting is that these ad hoc committees, I guess you would have to think about restructuring this a little bit. If you want to have one big giant committee and everybody is in the meeting, it's almost in essence a commission meeting, which is not really, you know, the point of having individual committee meetings is to get some of the work done in small groups and then to make a recommendation to the larger group. This would be the commission's decision, and the staff will be glad to implement your decision.
Are you with us, Commissioner Tom? Yeah,
I'm with you, my concern is the cumbersomeness of having this many people that don't show up. So I just wanted to put it out for discussion that maybe we should relook at the outreach, because it's the largest committee, about everyone's desire or commitment to it, just for efficiency.
Yeah.
But if we can operate, as you said, just at the executive committee and get around it, that will suffice. But my thought is, do we want to just suffice or try to make it as efficient as possible?
Amen to everything you said, Commissioner. So I believe Commissioner Fuentes is heading up that. Is it?
Outreach, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if I can make a suggestion that we're just putting it on the table for you at your next executive committee meeting. This can be agenda, and then the chair and the executive committee can make a decision on how you want to structure the committees.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a plus and a minus. If you have five, four committees, that's four meetings during the month in addition to your executive committee and your full commission meeting. So that would be, for some of you, six meetings per month. For the chair, it would be six meetings per month, since he is ex officio on every committee. So that would be your decision how you want to structure it.
Well, it's been working fine right now. It's not perfect. You know, it's not the ideal. I mean, I am willing to use the executive committee for any issues that you want to bring to the table. I know I have a quorum. For example, like we had The letter there, the last day, we were able to move it. It was kind of an immigration policy issue. Came out of, you know, we had the ability to move it on to this commission tonight. So that works well. So it's working pretty good. So until people want to sit on all these different committees, you know, I've still got to get the calendar and the issues moving. This is the only way efficiently I can do it. So, but in answer to your question, Commissioner Tom, if we can get everybody to show up to the commission meetings, I'm glad to go to every committee. You know, that's fine. But this one meeting executive, and we can get all our housekeeping and our business done there, seems to work so far. So I don't know.
Also, too, I don't know what our bylaws said. Might be a good idea to look into the idea of having a co-chair, just in case, you know, the for example, Fuente is out of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you have a quorum, you know, somebody still have to conduct, right?
Yeah. If you look at all the chairs,
right,
are usually the ones that will definitely show up for my meetings.
Uh-huh.
So they come to the executive. So I'm pretty much covered.
Okay.
I don't want more people, because more people means more quorum. So I want less people at this stage until everybody wants to show up to meetings.
No, what I'm saying is that, you know, you have all these members. Might be good to have co-chair.
If they don't show, yeah.
Right.
No.
If the chair doesn't show, that means there'll be no meeting, right?
Well, actually, we're pretty good on the executive committee meeting.
That's the executive committee. How about other committees?
No, I think he's talking about outreach specifically.
So outreach specifically, right. If there's anything to be calendared, it can be calendared with the chair or without the chair. If it's outreach orientated, I can still address it. I can still get it voted up or voted down or moved on to the. So I don't necessarily have to have the chair there. All I have to have is a quorum to move the agenda. That's it.
And of course, you are ex officio for the committees anyway.
Yeah.
So you should always make quorum.
But if you give me if you up my executive committee with vice chairs and things that I've got 1, 2, 3, 4. What am I, Madam Clerk? I just need I need 4 people, right, for an executive committee of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I need 3. That's all, really.
Well, now with Commissioner Posse, you would need 4 commissioners.
Yes. Yeah. So we're pretty good on getting the 4 commissioners. So if somebody from the outreach is not there and there's an outreach issue, we can still deal with it.
3, isn't it 3? There are five members of the executive.
Well, actually, Commissioner Call now. She's at
right, heart. She's on here. There are 5.
Oh, she is, yeah, sorry.
You have 5 commissioners. You need 3 for a quorum, not 4.
Yes.
It's 50% plus 1. You just need a simple majority. Okay, so commissioners, just for the record, in all of your committees for the last 2 years, there's only one committee that has a quorum, has met and had a quorum, and that's the executive committee. There were some committees that have never met, did not meet in all of the past 2 years, and one committee that has met, but didn't seldom had a quorum because there were too many members on the committee. So you would have to decide what is the most efficient way for you to make decisions and to hear issues. And so far, the only functioning committee has been your executive committee, which kind of acts as a quasi-everything committee.
And if you're a commissioner, even though you don't have a vote on there, but you have strong opinions, you can more than come and make those at the executive committee meeting. If you know, if you feel that it's absent on an outreach committee.
Well, what about having the executive committee as kind of the regular committee, but when there is a special need, have, like, if the outreach committee wanted to plan a special, then they should get together before the event to make sure we will have people there.
Well,
or something like that, so that they might want to meet once or twice as a large group, but otherwise they would be represented on the executive committee.
Well, Commissioner Tom and Commissioner Fuentes, the last time, if I remember rightly, would meet, let's say, at 5, and we were meeting at 5:30 at the outreach when they had outreach business.
Uh-huh.
And that worked fine, you know, and then that rolled into the executive committee meeting.
But I look at how many people you have. When you have a neighborhood meeting, you're going to need people who can help you access people in several languages. And so you would need...
All those, yeah.
Yeah,
well,
and other...
Well, they're on the committee, and when we set the dates, they're more than welcome to participate as they're supposed to.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, we're going to move the agenda along. Commissioner Moses.
Mr. Chair, I have to be excused. I have a therapy at 7 o'clock.
No problem.
You know, I just had an operation. And I was wondering, just this is just for your consideration, for the executive. When the Mayor Lee was chief, you usually come to a meeting all the time when we invite her. And I was wondering, since we have a new...
Yeah, we should ask her.
We should ask her, maybe be our guest speaker sometimes, and also to send a letter of congratulations to her.
I was at the swearing-in. It's a good point. It's probably kind of a new business type of
that's
thing.
What
but
I mean,
yeah,
right,
yeah. So I'll bring up. Yeah, but we might as well discuss it here now. She said that she was going to settle in and get around to all her different departments and come see us. And I know Director Pond will probably, when the time is right, will probably say it to her, and she will come.
Yeah. Commissioners, we've made the request, and she was going to come, but she's had a pretty hectic schedule. So as the year rolls out, she definitely intends to come and meet with the commission. But meanwhile. It would be great, I think, if the commission wanted to send her a congratulatory letter.
I mean, would be
which we'll be glad to draft on your behalf. If you trust the language to us,
of course.
The staff would be glad to draft that for you and have the chair sign it.
Perfect. Okay, let's do that then. Okay, is there any more discussion on the director's report?
Just a clarifying question. I think I heard Director Pond kind of in her report. I'm not sure if the request was to get some feedback on the proposed key events for 2012. And these are staff recommendations based on the feedback that was provided during the retreat. So I'm just wondering if you feel you have that feedback or if we can provide some feedback to the recommendations that's being made for the key events. It wasn't clear to me.
Okay, Commissioner.
Just as a point of clarification.
Yeah.
One bit of feedback I wanted is I don't want to lose access out of program committee. It says program and access and suggested just change it to programs. But I think since language access is one thing we are mandated to handle, that we should have some relationship to the committee. And I was thinking you have it a couple of places in relation to neighborhood meetings, and we really haven't heard much from people who use the services. In the beginning, this commission at every meeting would have people complaining about inadequate language access. And if so, some format, if not necessarily our main hearing, but a neighborhood meeting would, when the access report is finished, which I understand is soon, we could look at it and consider that. I'm not suggesting we decide now how to do it, but I think we should at least leave the name in program and access.
How would you like to handle the feedback, Director?
Oh, so commissioners, we'll take your feedback, and that's a great point. And you'll notice that in the proposed key events on the list, we did list language access as one of the possible topics for your neighborhood meeting. That's on page 2 of your strategic plan.
Yeah, I noticed that. Good.
And then under the committee names, under the policy and legislation committee, language access on page 5 is definitely listed as one of the key objectives.
Yeah.
So, you know, what the staff try to do is, rather than just name, you know, a title, we try to put some specific activities, some specific strategies down here for you. So what you're doing is concrete rather than...
I appreciated that. And then that's quite clear. It's just,
and then
don't drop the name, too.
And then under the program committee, we also left... there is a spot there under public input and community needs. To include hearings, and you can pick any topic that you want to have a hearing on. So if you decide in the executive committee coming up that you want to focus this year on language access rather than comprehensive immigration reform, you can make that the point of your hearing. And then as a committee, as we get closer to the event, you can plan the activities that go with that. You know, what does the program look like, et cetera. So the strategic plan is meant to be high level for you, and then the list of activities is meant to drill it down to specific things that you want to accomplish in this coming year. You know, a couple of neighborhood meetings, a big report, a big hearing, and a big extra activity.
Okay. Commissioner Tom?
Yeah, my interpretation of the dropping the access was that it's redundant in the word programs because it's such a big program that's already done. I didn't see that dropping it would be leaving it out in any sort of way because, you know, the language access is one of the programs that we do. I'm happy with the wording either way, though.
Okay. Yeah, I actually am in agreement with Commissioner Hale because although we do it now, what happens to in the future? You know, I actually think it's very important that it's at the forefront and we see it, but I also see what the director was saying because when I was leafing through it is everywhere. I do see it, but I definitely would like it to be at the forefront.
I think we'll do whatever you like. It's your plan, and I think part of why we put it under, because it's access is a policy. The commission does not have an access program per se. So when we put program committee, is really the activities and the programs that the commission drives. And language access is definitely more of a policy issue. The commission drives the advocacy and the policy of that. So that was our rationale for putting it under policy and legislation. We'll be glad to change it if it's up to you.
Well, we can't really take action on that right now, right? So why don't we, if I may, Vera, if we, and also...
Yeah, I didn't ask for a motion. Was feedback. Yeah.
If we could bring it up at the executive committee meeting, and if you have anything like that that you want to put on the table there, we can bring back to that and then have that for the next meeting. Direct to your input, any other input that you might have, a follow-up?
Oh, no, I just really, the only input is that as a newly appointed chair of a committee, I certainly want a committee that hasn't met for quite some time, from what I understand.
Yes.
I want to really learn what the processes and protocols are to begin to move the plan forward. I think that's, so I'll be committed to that. And so I'd like to be able to get some guidance from the director how I can begin to do that, because certainly I don't want, I want that process to start as soon as possible. I have some thoughts, including putting together a policy platform for this committee, a very focused one that can begin to bring back to the overall commission. So
Commissioner Perez, you're clear that you come to the executive committee meetings now, you know that, right?
No, I wasn't even clear
that.
Okay,
so you come to those because
I also come to those also.
Until you set up your own executive committee, come to the until you set up your own immigration.
Come to the
That's right. You do need four because Commissioner Paz is a member.
We need so the last committee executive committee meeting you should have been at that. We'll make sure, Madam Clerk will make sure that he's on that list to call for the executive committee meeting. And so then you'll be able, from that point, you'll be able to do your work.
Perfect.
Until you get your committee up and going. Okay?
Thank you.
Perfect. Okay. Is there any more discussion? See none? Okay. So new business. Has anybody got any new business we should be tackling? No idea is too slow for us. Okay, go ahead.
Sorry, commissioners, I didn't actually do my director report. That was your strategic plan.
Oh, sorry. Okay, no more discussion.
But I just have a couple of quick items. So we will follow up on a letter to City Administrator Kelly. Former Supervisor Bevan Dufty started today as the city's new Director of Housing Opportunities, Partnerships, and Engagement. And he will be operating out of room 18, which is the former headquarters of our Community Ambassadors Program, which is now relocating to a different room in City Hall. And then the OSEA staff is operating on all cylinders. We're really busy right now with the Community Ambassadors Program, now operating in two districts, the Language Services Unit, which is staffing all of the redistricting meetings for the redistricting task force. And if you haven't already, we encourage commissioners to attend these meetings and try to weigh in on the impact of redrawing the district lines and what that will do to various communities and populations. It's hard, I think, difficult to listen to the sheer amount of sheer volume of information, but if you hang with it, some of the meetings currently taking place, you'll get a sense of how people in different districts are responding to the, and I know Commissioner Cole has attended some. So it's good education for the commission.
Oh, and when? How can we find out when and where?
We'll be glad to forward tomorrow. We'll have the commission clerk forward the calendar to all of you. Okay, and then staff are currently analyzing the data submitted by Tier 1 city departments for the language access ordinance. We'll be drafting the report in about a week, and we'll present this to the commission, the mayor, and the board by March 1st. That is our deadline as required by the law. It's very tight because many of the departments did not submit complete information, so we have to go back and negotiate and draw that out of them. Once the commission has reviewed the findings, then it can decide whether or not it wants to hold a special hearing on language access and call departments to the table.
That's okay, Director. Is there any discussion on the Director's report? Okay, seeing none, we'll close that item 8. And so now number 9 is a new business. Has anybody got any new business they'd like to discuss here with the Commission this evening?
This is not really new business, but if anybody wants a copy of this article about the Ninth Circuit, I can leave it with. Maybe you should let Whitney know, or how she.
You can look it up online, right? What date?
Well,
what?
I didn't successfully do that.
What? It's the Chronicle, right? Was it?
Yes, it's the Chronicle.
What date?
February 7th.
February, so you can get it.
What?
You should be able to get it, yeah.
Well, I was not successful.
No?
We can send all of you the links. There are about, like, tons of articles. Whitney also did some research and got the actual case numbers, so we can pull for you. They're not really that long, because all it is saying that, you know, they're halting the deportation hearing procedures until they hear back from the administration, but we'll be glad to send a packet of information to everyone and with all the links.
Okay. So we don't need to.
Is there any more new business to discuss, commissioners? See none, then with that, we'll adjourn this meeting. Thank you all for coming out this evening. It was a good, productive meeting. Thank you. All right.